Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, and on today's podcast, we're going to continue our series discussing the top 10 problems with biological and chemical evolution, discussing the second problem, that unguided chemical processes cannot explain the origin of the genetic code. And again, this series is based upon a chapter in the book More Than Myth, edited by Robert Stackpole and Paul Brown. Let's assume, for a moment, that a primordial sea filled with life's building blocks did exist on the early Earth, and somehow it formed proteins and other complex organic molecules. Origin of life theorists believe that the next step in the origin of life is that, entirely by chance, more and more complex molecules formed until some began to self-replicate. From there, they begin that Darwinian natural selection took over, favoring those molecules which were better able to make copies. Eventually, they assume, it became inevitable that these molecules would evolve complex machinery like that used in today's genetic code to survive and reproduce. Have modern theorists explained how this crucial bridge from inert non-living chemicals to self-replicating molecular systems took place? The most prominent hypothesis for the origin of the first life is called the RNA world hypothesis. In living cells, genetic information is carried by DNA, and most cellular functions are carried out by proteins. However, RNA is capable of carrying both genetic information and also catalyzing some biochemical reactions. As a result, some theorists postulate that the first life might have used RNA alone to fulfill both these functions. But there are many problems with this hypothesis. For one, the first RNA molecules would have to arise by unguided, non-biological chemical processes. But RNA is not known to assemble without the help of a skilled laboratory chemist, an intelligent agent guiding the process. New York University chemist Robert Shapiro critiqued the efforts of those who tried to make RNA in the lab, stating, quote, "The flaw is in the logic that this experimental control by researchers in a modern laboratory could have been available on the early Earth," unquote. Second, while RNA has been shown to perform many roles in the cell, there is no evidence that it could perform all the necessary cellular functions currently carried out by proteins. Third, the RNA world hypothesis does not explain the origin of new genetic information. RNA world advocates suggest that if the first self-replicating life was based upon RNA, it would have required a molecule between 200 and 300 nucleotides in length. However, there are no known chemical or physical laws that dictate the order of those nucleotides. To explain the order of those nucleotides in the first self-replicating RNA molecule, materialists must rely upon sheer chance. But the odds of specifying, say, 250 nucleotides in an RNA molecule by chance is about 1 in 10 to the 150th power, below what's called the universal probability boundary, or events which are remotely possible to occur within the history of the entire universe. Shapiro puts the problem this way, quote, "The sudden appearance of a large self-copying molecule such as RNA was exceedingly improbable. The probability is so vanishingly small that its happening once anywhere in the visible universe would count as a piece of exceptional good luck," unquote. Fourth, and more fundamentally, the RNA world hypothesis does not explain the origin of the genetic code itself. In order to evolve into the DNA protein-based life that exists today, the RNA world would need to evolve the ability to convert genetic information into proteins. However, this process of transcription and translation requires a large suite of proteins and molecular machines, which themselves are encoded by genetic information. This poses a chicken and egg problem where essential enzymes and molecular machines are needed to perform the very task that constructs them. To appreciate this problem, consider the origin of the very first DVD and DVD player. DVDs are rich in information, but without the machinery of a DVD player to read the disc and process its information and convert it in some kind of a picture and sound, a DVD disc would be useless. But what if the instructions for building the very first DVD player were found only encoded on a DVD? You could never play the DVD to learn how to build the DVD player in the first place. So how did the first disc and DVD player system arise? The answer is obvious. A goal-directed process in television design is required to produce both the player and the disc at the same time. In living cells, information-carrying molecules like DNA or RNA are like the DVD, and the cellular machinery that reads the information and converts it into proteins are like the DVD player. Just like the DVD analogy, genetic information can never be converted into proteins without the proper machinery. Yet in cells, the machines required for processing the genetic information in RNA or DNA are encoded by those same genetic molecules. They perform and direct the very task that builds them. This system cannot exist unless both the genetic information and the transcription translation machinery are present at the same time, and unless both speak the same language. Biologist Frank Salisbury explained this problem in a paper in American Biology Teacher not long after the workings of the genetic code were first uncovered, stating, quote, "It's nice to talk about replicating DNA molecules arising in a SUPC, but in modern cells, this replication requires the presence of suitable enzymes. The link between DNA and the enzyme is a highly complex one, involving RNA and an enzyme for its synthesis on a DNA template, ribosomes, enzymes to activate the amino acids, and transfer RNA molecules. How, in the absence of the final enzyme, could selection act upon the DNA and all the mechanisms for replicating it? It's as though everything must happen at once. The entire system must come into being as one unit, or it is worthless. There may well be ways out of this dilemma, but I don't see them at the moment," unquote. Despite decades of work, origin of life theorists are still at a loss to explain how this system arose. In 2007, Harvard chemist George Whitesides was given the Priestley Medal, the highest award of the American Chemical Society. During his acceptance speech, he offered this stark analysis reprinted in the journal Chemical and Engineering News, stating, quote, "The origin of life. This problem is one of the big ones in science. It begins to place life and us in the universe. Most chemists believe, as do I, that life emerged spontaneously from mixtures of molecules in the prebiotic earth. How? I have no idea," unquote. Similarly, the aforementioned article in Cell Biology International concludes, quote, "New approaches to investigating the origin of the genetic code are required. The constraints of historical science are such that the origin of life may never be understood," unquote. That is, they may never be understood unless scientists are willing to consider goal-directed scientific explanations like intelligent design. But there is a much deeper problem with theories of chemical evolution as well as with biological evolution. This pertains not just to the ability to process genetic information via a genetic code, but the origin of that information itself, which we'll discuss in the next segment in this series of the top 10 problems with biological and chemical evolution. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.